and stopping points and various stages in the process of the hereafter, until we finally go to where we have to go, where regardless of where that is, heaven or hell or whatever. So one of those way stations or mawaqif is what they call the bridge or the sirat. Now, this bridge has been described in many different ways. A lot of times it's been said that this is the bridge that passes over hell, and it's a bridge that everybody has to pass over, and it finally, on the other side of it is heaven. When a person passes over it, he enters heaven. But if he should stumble on the way over this bridge, he will fall into hell. Right. So, and it's often been described as being sharper than a sword and thinner than a hair, right? Right. So we're not really concerned about describing this bridge and interpreting it in and showing exactly what it means and so on and so forth. Right now, we want to say, we want to ask the following question: how can we make sure that we can easily pass over this bridge in a very quickly and in a very good manner? Of course, this answer to this question is very clear. We have to be good people. We have to perform good deeds. And, stay away from evil ones, the things that God Almighty has prohibited us from doing. But can we be more specific? Is there something that can help us on that day? Is there something that can help us on that very, very grave and very dangerous situation? Yes, fortunately, we have answer to this in the hadith and in the traditions of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. The Holy Prophet, in a very beautiful and a very luminous tradition, has said, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, As-salatu alayya nurun fis-sirat. As-salatu alayya nurun fis-sirat. The Prophet said that if somebody sends his benedictions upon me, then this benedictions and these salutations that he sends upon me will serve as a light when he's passing over that bridge on that day. If you want to pass over that bridge, we want to make the journey over that bridge, or we need a lot of things in order to pass over it. One of those things that we need is a light, something to illuminate our path so we can easily pass over that thing and we don't stumble over and fall into hell. Right. One of the things that can help us is the salawat and the benedictions that we send upon the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So the more we send our salutations upon him here, the more luminous will our path be, and the more easily we will be able to pass over that bridge. We might also interpret this tradition in another way, perhaps, and say that on that day, the people who really love the Prophet here in this world, right, they when they reach that point, they will send their salawat and benedictions upon the Prophet, and by doing so, over there, I mean, not in this world, but when they get to that way station, they send their salutations to the Prophet, this salutation will transform into a light and illuminate their path, and they will be easily, readily pass over the bridge and, enter the station of paradise. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at one of the benefits of the salawat upon the Prophet. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Aga, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Russia, Saglam, Istanbul.
Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
In what seems to be a hefty catch, the Lebanese internal security forces have thwarted a plan by Daesh terrorists to carry out 3 suicide bombings targeting religious compounds in Beirut's southern suburbs. Interior Minister Bassam al-Maulawi told reporters that had this terrorist plot not been stopped, it would have taken Lebanon to a very dangerous situation.
At-Takfiri terrorist group recruited young Palestinian men in Lebanon to carry out major bombing attacks using explosive belts and using explosives which contain rocket missiles.
Lebanon's internal security forces said the instructions for the bomb plot came from a Daesh operative based in the Palestinian refugee camp of Ain al-Helwi, who is in touch with extremists in Syria. The terrorist operative was given explosive vests and other weapons to prepare for simultaneous attacks on three religious compounds in the southern suburbs of Beirut. This is reminiscent to a wave of attacks in the Beirut suburbs between 2013 and 2014. The instructions were passed to an undercover internal security forces agent who had successfully managed to infiltrate Daesh networks in Lebanon. Observers see that Daesh has lost initiative in Lebanon, Syria and Iraq and is trying to gain ground.
I think that ISIS is now trying to implement a qualitative operation attack in Lebanon after the death of his leader al-Qurashi in 3 February in Syria, because he lost initiative in Lebanon, in Syria, and in Iraq.
Daesh is seemingly taking advantage of a deep financial crisis in Lebanon to attract recruits, promising them high salaries.
ISIS didn't stop trying to get inside the Lebanese society when he succeeded in to send many young men from Tripoli to Iraq. More than 49 young men have been sent to Iraq. 9 of them have been killed, targeted by the Iraqis just 3 weeks ago. And now the information about a Palestinian cell in the Palestinian camp in Lebanon.
Al-Mawlawi uncovered that the ministry and the security apparatus are monitoring the movement of Lebanese leaving the northern city of Tripoli to join the terrorist group and have opened talks with Iraqi authorities on this threat. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Hundreds of Afghan youths and sportsmen rallied against the U.S. in Kabul. The rally is part of massive anti-U.S. sentiments underway in the country over the recent decision by the American president to give some parts of the Afghans' national assets to the victims of the 9/11 attacks. "We want all of our money. Biden is a thief. Death to America." These are the slogans that the protesters chanted as they were holding anti-U.S. placards. "These sportsmen call on the U.S. to reverse its decision and free all of their money. They say freezing Afghanistan's assets has harmed all aspects of the Afghan society."
"We have gathered here on behalf of all Afghan youths and sportsmen to condemn the U.S. president's decision to give half of our frozen assets to Americans. Of course, this decision is crazy and unjust. The U.S.'s move has affected all Afghans' lives. Our athletes and sportsmen are quitting sports due to economic difficulties."
The angry protesters also say that if the U.S. does not reverse its unjust and immoral decision, their protests will escalate.
"The U.S. considers itself as one of the richest countries, but now it's shamelessly stealing from the poorest people of the world. We call on the U.S. to free all of our frozen assets and stop punishing and torturing Afghans. Our demonstrations will continue until we reach our rights."
Staging in front of the U.N. office in Kabul, the protesters called on the U.N. and World Bank donors not to stay silent against the U.S. operations and stay by Afghans' side.
"Afghans were not involved in 9/11 attack. This was crystal clear to the world countries. So why should the U.S. seek revenge from us? In addition, today Afghans are dealing with many economic and health crises. We urge the international community to make the U.S. reconsider its decision and let the flow of aid to our vulnerable people."
Last week, the U.S. president signed an order allowing half of $7 billion in Afghan frozen assets to be given to 9/11 victims. The move has sparked outrage in Afghanistan and was massively denounced. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
This is an occasion to honor poets and poetry. The 16th edition of Fajr International Poetry Festival saw its closing ceremony in Tehran. or the best Persian poetry works of the year were acknowledged and awarded. During the event, participants from Iran and other countries contended in different categories, including classic poetry, modern poetry, and children and young adults.
I won the prize for the best poetry book for children and young adults. My book is titled Silence in the Mother Tongue. I'm so glad that my effort is seen, judged, and acknowledged by top Iranian literary personalities from the jury of the festival.
Certainly, Fajr Poetry Festival is of great significance to me as an Afghan poet. Here, literary experts from Iran, Tajikistan, Afghanistan, and many parts of the world can network and make joint efforts to promote the Persian language.
Iran is known as the land of poets, being home to many world-renowned literary figures over the centuries, including Rumi, Hafez, and Khayyam. Experts here believe Persian poetry has no expiry date, and not only do Iranians still read ancient poems, they're also interested in modern prose and poetry.
Poetry is a beautiful language that speaks the beauty of the world, and such a language always communicates very well with the hearts of human beings. Iranians have long understood the beauty of this language and still listen to it and read it in its every form and genre.
Fajr International Poetry Festival was launched in 2006 as a platform for Persian poets from Iran and other Persian-speaking countries to get together for the elevation of Persian poetry. However, the literary event has grown to encompass non-Persian poets who are interested in Iranian literature.
Poetry holds a special position among Iranians, and you can rarely find an Iranian family that doesn't have a poetry book in their bookshelves. Now, aside from acknowledging Persian literary figures and poets, Fajr Festival seeks to preserve this long-standing culture and introduce it to the world. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Under a sea of red flags, the Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine, DFLP, held a big protest to mark its 53rd anniversary and support Al-Quds. People thronged the streets of Gaza City to take part in the event. Protesters shouted slogans against the Israeli regime and vowed to stand with Al-Quds. Tensions heightened across the Palestinian territories in mid-February when Israeli forces and illegal settlers renewed their attacks against Palestinians in Al-Quds' Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood.
53 years on, the DFLP continues to hold sacred the liberation of Al-Quds and the right of return. And we will call on all Palestinians to protect Sheikh Jarrah.
The Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine refuses to recognize the Israeli regime and maintains armed resistance as the only way to end the Israeli occupation.
Resistance is the best way to liberate Al-Quds, and we say to our people in Sheikh Jarrah that we always support them. We are willing to sacrifice our lives for the sake of defending Al-Quds and all of Palestine against the Zionist enemy.
DFLP activists called on all Palestinian factions to increase armed resistance against the Israeli regime and its forces. Protesters also slammed Arab countries in the Persian Gulf region for normalizing their relations with Tel Aviv.
All those countries who normalize their ties with Israel are stabbing the Palestinian people in the back and hurting our cause. Israel is using normalization as a pretext to increase its violations in Al-Quds.
Palestinians stress that Al-Quds will always remain the capital of Palestine despite the U.S. and Israeli plots to change its status.
As they mark the 53rd anniversary of the DFLP, Palestinians in Gaza say they will continue to resist the Israeli occupation until the liberation of Al-Quds. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
EU foreign affairs ministers held emergency talks on Tuesday to agree on sanctions against 351 Russian legislators who voted to give independence to two regions in eastern Ukraine. The West claims it's the beginning of an invasion. Russian financial, business and media outlets are also being singled out by the EU.
We agreed to target 27 individuals and entities who are playing a role in undermining or threatening Ukrainian territorial integrity.
The measures will result in asset freezes and travel bans.
We're limiting the Russian government's ability
to raise capital on the EU's financial markets.
A new gas pipeline from Russia to Germany will, for now at least, remain closed. This despite the EU desperately needing Russia's energy. Citizens passing by the European Commission, the EU's executive arm, have clearly been following developments closely.
Ukraine, of course, has been generated as a state during the Soviet period, but in a way consists of several areas which are very difficult to be maintained together.
Yeah, we need peace. Our economy is based on international trade, and gas is one of our main tools to survive.
The European Commission confirmed on Tuesday EU gas reserve storage tanks are currently only 30% full. The Commission is actively trying to secure alternative supply chains in order to reduce the EU's dependency on Russia. It's in contact, for example, with Japan, South Korea, Qatar, Azerbaijan and Egypt. But this is a very costly process because the energy has to be shipped in. Russia's gas is cheap and, of course, the pipelines are already in place. NATO, which has its headquarters here in Brussels, continued to ramp up the anti-Russia rhetoric after the new sanctions were announced.
We have over 100 jets at high alert, and there are more than 120 Allied ships at the sea from the high north to the Mediterranean.
Many analysts say this crisis could have been avoided if NATO had listened to Russia's legitimate security concerns. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
On Tuesday, the Italian Bureau of Statistics, Istat, announced Italy's inflation surged to 4.8% last month from 3.9% in December and is now at its highest since 1996. The statistical agency said its trolley index of everyday goods, such as food and household items, was up 3.2% with the Italians starting to buckle under the pressure. Price rises, Istat explained, were driven by higher energy costs.
Bread, milk, pasta, the price of every item has gone up considerably. I go shopping every day and it cannot go unnoticed.
Energy bills have gone up for a while and keeping the shop open is becoming unsustainable. In December I paid almost 100% more compared to the previous bill. I'm really concerned over what's happening in Ukraine. Should energy prices further hike, I would have to turn off the lights or shut off the shop.
Tension keeps growing at the border of the EU and Russia after Russian President Vladimir Putin issued a decree recognizing breakaway Luhansk and Donetsk regions in eastern Ukraine as independent. Western leaders have vowed to impose severe sanctions over Moscow aimed at limiting Russia's ability to export oil and gas. Italy's Prime Minister Mario Draghi has warned that any international sanctions targeting Russia's energy industry would hit Italy badly. Unlike other major European countries, Rome is very much gas dependent, being the leading producer of electricity with this fuel in Europe.
Italy sources around 40% of its gas from Russia. As we are in February, with the warmer season fast approaching, the energy demand is set to drop a bit. It is to be hoped that the Ukraine crisis will be resolved in the next 6 to 7 months. In case it is not, the EU, which won't be self-sufficient in energy anytime soon, will have to find unity of purpose among its member states and embrace a more assertive energy strategy.
Rome has historically relatively strong commercial ties with Moscow. In recent days, Italy had announced plans for the possibility of Draghi flying to the Russian capital for talks over the Ukraine crisis with Putin. Max Civili, Rome.
The Ukraine crisis is entering a new phase as Russia recognizes the independence of two breakaway regions in eastern Ukraine.
I consider it necessary to make a long overdue decision to immediately recognize the independence and sovereignty of the Donetsk People's Republic and the Luhansk People's Republic.
Putin has also issued an order to deploy peacekeepers to Donetsk and Luhansk. Russia has already denied any plans to attack Ukraine or annex the two regions. The Russian president justified his decision by accusing the West of cheating Moscow and dishonoring their promise to stop NATO's eastward expansion.
They simply fooled us. We had five stages of NATO expansion, one after another. It has impacted very negatively on the nature of international relations and led to the loss of mutual trust.
Putin reiterated that Kyiv's admission to NATO would pose a major security threat to his country. The comments provoked Kyiv's reaction.
Ukraine unequivocally qualifies the recent actions of the Russian Federation as a violation of the sovereignty and territorial integrity of our state.
Hours later, the UN Security Council held an emergency meeting on the situation. Russia, Ukraine, and the U.S. clashed head-to-head at the meeting.
The internationally recognized borders of Ukraine have been and will remain unchangeable, regardless of any statements and actions by the Russian Federation.
What is more, this move by President Putin is clearly the basis for Russia's attempt to create a pretext for a further invasion of Ukraine.
We remain open to diplomacy for a diplomatic solution. However, allowing a new bloodbath in Donbass is something we do not intend to do.
Russia has warned Western powers to think twice and not worsen the situation, but the West's reaction was nothing other than critical remarks and threat of sanctions against Moscow. The Kremlin accuses Ukraine and the West of violating the Minsk agreements. It says the government in Kyiv is committing genocide in the Donbas region, while the West sends offensive weapons to the country. On the other hand, the West claims Russia intends to invade Ukraine. The Minsk agreements were signed in 2014 and 2015 to secure a ceasefire between the Ukrainian government and pro-Russian forces in the east of Ukraine. The Kremlin has repeatedly expressed concern about NATO's eastward expansion, demanding a ban on Ukraine's admission to the military alliance. So far, the U.S. and its NATO allies have only blown on calls by ignoring Russia's concerns and its requests for security guarantees.
People in the blockaded Gaza Strip staged a sit-in to support Palestinian prisoners languishing in Israeli jails and detention centers. During the sit-in, people shouted slogans against the Israeli regime and demanded the release of all Palestinian prisoners. Palestinian prisoners are political prisoners, and they are regarded as heroes and freedom fighters by all Palestinians.
The suffering of Palestinian prisoners has increased in recent months, especially following the bold escape operation in September. Prisoners, including women and children, suffer every day inside Zionist jails. The Zionist crimes against the prisoners must stop.
The sit-in comes at a time when hundreds of Palestinian detainees have been denied proper medical treatment in Israeli jails. Over 200 Palestinian detainees have died in Israeli prisons since 1967. During a press conference outside the Red Cross office, the Palestinian Ministry of Health condemned Israel's inhumane treatment of Palestinian prisoners, especially those suffering from chronic medical conditions.
For Palestinian inmates, Israeli prisons serve as gateways towards their death because of medical negligence. Currently, there are 700 very sick Palestinian prisoners inside Israeli prisons without proper medical care. Those sick prisoners are dying slowly as the world watches in silence.
Palestinian prisoners are held in 24 Israeli prisons and detention centers where they are denied basic human rights. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas demanded international protection for Palestinian prisoners.
We call on the Red Cross and all international organizations to help Palestinian prisoners, especially those who are sick in Zionist jails. We demand international protection for Palestinian prisoners. They are suffering because of the racist Zionist practices.
People here are calling on the international community to come out of its silence and help Palestinian prisoners.
According to prisoners' advocacy groups, there are thousands of Palestinian prisoners suffering in Israeli prisons under inhumane detention conditions. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
As the crisis escalates between Russia and Ukraine, it's the role of the media that's become increasingly crucial. In Britain's parliament, the leader of the opposition Labour Party waded into the discussion with a controversial position.
Russia today is his personal propaganda tool. I can see no reason why it should be allowed to continue to broadcast in this country. So will the Prime Minister now ask Ofcom to review its licence?
Mr. Speaker, I believe that my right honourable friend, the Secretary of State for Culture, Media and Sport, has already asked Ofcom to review that matter.
It's not the first time RT has been targeted.
But long gone are the days of Labour Party leader Jeremy Corbyn appearing on the channel. Starmer is keen to stake his anti-Russian credentials.
Russia and the West are both acutely aware that the media battle is as important as any armed conflict. And by attempting to silence Russian media here in the United Kingdom, the British establishment is simply continuing a long-held tradition of censorship.
Political observers disagree with Starmer's stance.
It's totalitarian surveillance capitalism, essentially, which is continuing its ugly march through the West. I mean, where we actually prided ourselves in not being so censored, we're now at the stage where we're controlling media. At that point, of course, I know Press TV were victims of exactly this. There have been many people across social media who are constantly being censored. And I think it's a very dangerous development. And when it's normalized to the extent where, you know, the major party leaders, the prime minister, are all acting as if it's a perfectly normal thing to do, it's a very dangerous and dark day for democracy.
Though it's not publicly commented on whether there will be a probe, Ofcom's impartiality has already come under scrutiny, and observers are urging caution and for the organization to abide by media rules, not political pressure.
It is always good to hear the other side of an argument anyway and an alternative narrative so you can see and make a balanced judgment of what is going on, because we know from the Iraq war and the propaganda about WMD that our own government doesn't necessarily tell the truth when it goes to broadcast either. These are very troubled times, and the last thing we need is censorship of our television viewing.
As calls ring out for calm heads and a de-escalation to prevail in the current crisis, media observers hope the people at home and abroad can have a plurality of media voices, this to help shape their views. Amina Taylor, London.
This is Foresight. A program on how to worship Allah.
Allah, 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 Allah.
Today's wonderful tip: what are the secrets of a tranquil heart and a repetitive recitation when it comes to our ubudiyah, our servitude to Allah?
Allahu Rabbi, la sharika lahu.
So, dear listeners, one of the things that is very important if we want to increase and strengthen our ubudiyah, our servitude to Allah, our worship of Allah, our obedience to Allah, is that we need to have a calm heart. But along with a calm heart, a heart that is at peace, we also need to recite these recitations and these du'as, these supplications, and these verses of the Quran and these prayers repetitively, continuously, in a stable manner. Now, when it comes to having a tranquil heart and again having a repetitive recitation of these du'as and these prayers and the recitation of the Holy Quran as well, the reason is that when we have a tranquil heart, the effect and the inner meanings and the spiritual effects of these different prayers and du'as and supplications, they have an effect upon our heart. Now, of course, if our heart isn't tranquil, if our heart is uneasy, anxious, frustrated, stressed, then these prayers, they won't have the intended spiritual effect. And of course, when these prayers and the meanings of these prayers and the depth of these prayers and these du'as and these the recitation of the Quran, when these things do not become a part of our lives and become a part of our heart and our soul, then when difficulties come along our way, then we forget all of these things. So, for example, when the terrors and the difficulties of our lives come upon us, then we might turn back upon the religion. Now, most especially the terrors of the agonies of death, or the difficulties of the last breaths that one take, or the moment of dying, this point in time, i.e. dying, is difficult, and for some it is quite terrifying, as well as the Day of Judgment, or as well as the time that we are waiting in order to be judged. These moments are so terrifying and so frightful. If we have committed sins and we haven't asked for forgiveness and we haven't done good things in our lives, that the terror and the fright and the difficulties of these moments will make us forget these prayers and these du'as and the recitation of the Qur'an. And so that's why it is so important to have a tranquil heart, but also to repeat these recitations in order for them to become an integral part and parcel of our heart, mind, and soul.
Ya Allah, ya Allah, ya Allah.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.com.
Ya Allah, ya Rahman, haqqiq amanina, waffiqna fi kulli an fi ma sa'ina. Ya Allah, ya Mannan, haqqiq amanina, waffiqna fi kulli an fi ma sa'ina. رجائي بالرضا والخير أنير طريقي مع صديقي باحترام الغير.
Dear listeners of the program Foresight, my name is Muhammad. Today, I'm going to read to you an excerpt from Munajat al-Muftariqin, meaning the whispered prayer of the utterly poor. Stay tuned.
أنا العبد الفقير وأنا أعيش وصاحب القلق نهاري دونكم ليل وليل.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. My God, nothing will mend my fracture but your gentleness and loving care. Free me of my poverty by your affection and beneficence. Still my fright by your security. Exalt my abasement by your sovereignty. Take me to my hope but your bounty. Remedy my lack, but your graciousness. Accomplish my need other than you. Relieve my distress other than your mercy. Remove my injury other than your clemency. Cool my burning thirst, but reaching you. Quench my ardor, but meeting you. Damp my yearning, but gazing upon your face. Settle my settling place without closeness to you. Allay my worry but your repose. Cure my illness but your medicine. Eliminate my grief but your nearness. Heal my wound but your forgiveness. Remove the rust on my heart but your pardon. Banish the confusing thoughts from my chest, but your command.
بكم يا
يحيى إذا زرتم وتفرح باللقاء الحدق فإن غبتم فلا صبر ولا جرد ولا رمق بكم يحيى إذا زرتم وتفرح باللقاء الحدق فإن غبتم
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Foresight on IRIB English Radio. So we were talking about the effects of prayers and du'as and supplications and the recitation of the Holy Quran and these different incantations or dhikr, the remembrance of Allah, the Almighty, the Exalted, and the effects of all of these things upon a tranquil heart and an untranquil heart. And so when we were talking about the untranquil heart, we had said that an untranquil heart, a heart that is anxious or has stress or is frustrated, these different prayers and supplications, not only do they not have the intended spiritual effect upon an individual, but also they do not form a kind of certainty and they are not firmly placed in one's heart, mind, and soul. And of course, we followed up with the idea that if these things are not firmly placed in our hearts and in our minds and in our souls, then of course what will happen is that in certain moments of difficulties or terror or fright throughout our lives, and even at the end of our life when we die, or for example in the barzakh, the purgatory for lack of a better word, the time after dying and before the day of resurrection, and of course the fear of the day of resurrection itself when everybody will be held accountable for their deeds, whether good or bad. At these moments of intense terror, fear, and difficulty, we will turn back upon our religion. We will forget these supplications and these concepts such as Tawheed and Nubuwwat and Imamat. And this is what happens when our heart is untranquil and our heart is not at peace when we are doing the du'as and the prayers and the supplications and the recitations. Another integral part of this inculcating in our mind, body, and soul, these du'as and recitations and prayers and supplications, yes, of course, on one hand is a tranquil heart, a heart which is at peace, a heart which is calm, so that it is receptive to the spiritual effects and the spiritual blessings which are to come. But on the other hand is also repetitiveness and consistency in these recitations and prayers and du'as. Of course, it is the repetition of these du'as and the consistency of these du'as and supplications and namaz and prayers and salat, which really has an impact. And the more they are repeated and the more they are consistent, then the more effect they will have. And so this tranquility of heart and this repetitive, constant, stable recitation, this leads to this place and this point where the innermost part of the salik, the spiritual wayfarer, the person who is trying to increase and enhance their ubudiyah, their heart and their soul becomes united with the spirit of worship. But right, like we said, should the heart lack tranquility, should it lack itminan, again tranquility, quietude, serenity, then the supplications won't have any effect. And the rituals will just be mere rituals. They will just be physical actions that we are doing, like a physical exercise. And furthermore, these actions of ours, they will not pass from the outer appearance and the limits of the body, and they won't really influence the inner soul and the heart and the mind. And so the parts of the truth and the spirituality of worship is not effectful upon a human being. Again, the importance of having a tranquil heart, a calm heart, a heart which has itminan, it has tranquility, and a constant and stable and repetitive recitation of our prayers, our supplications, our du'as, our namaz, our salat, all in order to increase, enhance, purify, and strengthen our ubudiyah, our servitude to Allah, our worship, to Allah, the Mighty, the Exalted.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is farstoday.com.
Everyone, today's question asks, why do Muslims pray? One of the most important rulings in Islam is the daily prayer that Muslims must partake in. Maybe you have seen Muslims in large groups say prayer together on TV. You might think it looks a little weird because there is so much action involved in prayer. Why don't Muslims just clasp their hands together, become reverent, and speak their prayers silently? Why must there be a loud call to prayer and a set time for these prayers to be said in? This is because Muslims all around the world pray the same prayer in the same way and at the same times. In total, there are 5 separate prayers that Muslims recite in Arabic. This is so that there can be conformity for all prayers said. But the true beauty of the prayer lies in the meaning, and so many Muslims choose to look up the translation of the prayer in their own language so that they truly know what they are reciting. The reason for the actual prayer is so that Muslims always focus on being kind and doing the right thing no matter the circumstances. In Islam, it is believed that the world is a testing ground for humans in which they have to always choose for the right over the wrong. It is also believed that humans, after they die and on Judgment Day, will be judged based on their actions on earth. The prayer, therefore, acts as a sort of shield against wrongdoings that might tempt the people. They help remind people that their life on earth is short and serve as a means to put life in perspective.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Foresight. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode and another great tip, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave radio, FM, and satellites. our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in southern Africa via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. Or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners, thank you so very much for joining us on today's brand new episode of The Lantern. I don't know what the reason is. And it's so much so that we constantly come across memes and jokes and reels and whatever about this topic on social media. And I'm somehow glad that it's more openly talked about in a very lighthearted sort of quality. Maybe it will raise more awareness in the next generation, because the past generation is a lost cause to a certain degree. But in certain cultures, the amount of toxic talk down children receive from their parents is just ridiculous. I am in no position to tell parents how to raise their kids or tell cultures how to culture. But again, just from personal experience, when I compare the different families that I see around me from different backgrounds, and the way the parents and the children interact with each other, the words that are used, God, words are so, so, so important. The way we talk to each other, our choice of words, sometimes even the tone we use. And I'm just telling this to remind myself, because I can be so salty and so sassy sometimes in the way I speak. I go back and I think about it in my head, and I was like, dang, I was such a jerk. And so many ahadith and riwayat and ayat warn us about this matter. Let's listen to a story about this, about choice of words and the impact they have on other human beings, and we'll be right back.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, dear brothers and sisters, salamun alaikum. So welcome to this episode of Lantern, Wranglers and Strangers is the title of today's story. Many years ago, there were a group of brilliant young men at the University of Wisconsin. The group of men seemed to have an amazing creative literary talent and were extraordinary in their ability to put their literary skills to its best use. These promising young men met regularly to read and critique each other's literary works. These men were merciless while they criticized one another. They accepted the most minute of the expressions and offered tough and even mean criticism to each other's work. These meeting sessions became arenas of literary criticism, and the members of this exclusive club called themselves the Strangers. Not to be excluded to the opportunity to level up their literary skills, women of the literary interest in the university started a club of their own, one comparable to Stranglers. The members called themselves the Wranglers. The member of the loop, too, presented their literary pieces in front of each other, but the feedback from members were much more softer, more pathetic, and more encouraging. Every effort from a member, even the more feeble one, was encouraged by all. After 20 years, a university alumnus was doing a study of his classmate's career when he noticed the huge difference in the literary accomplishments of the Stranglers and the Wranglers. Among all the brilliant young men in the Stranglers, none had made any significant literary achievement, but the Wranglers have several successful writers and some renowned national literary talents. The talent and the education between the two groups were almost the same. The Stranglers strangled each other while the Wranglers gave each other a lift. The Stranglers created an atmosphere of contention and self-doubt while the Wranglers brought out the best in each other. The greatest success we'll know is helping others succeed and grow. That was the famous quote by Georgie Scott Reid.
The Lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
Some people in life are legit stranglers with their words. And I know that it stems from this inner anger, this inner trauma that they have. It hasn't been resolved. They haven't been able to sort out that that pain, that hurt they're experiencing. They haven't been able to heal from that and move on from that and find a solution for this dysfunctionality they are experiencing, and it reflects into their words and how they use it in relation with others. I totally understand that. And I totally understand that often when someone uses harsh and destructive and hurtful words toward me, it's not necessarily something that has to do with me, and I shouldn't take it personally. It mostly pertains to who they are as a person. And it makes me feel sorry for them because, you know, you realize that, yeah, that person's actually been talked to like that so often and they don't know any better than to, you know, choose kinder, softer words. But if we really sit down and contemplate on this matter with ourselves, you know, have a one-on-one with ourselves and really reflect on the subject in depth, from a psychological, mental, and spiritual aspect, and even emotional, really, we can change it. Or we can improve it, at least. Some scars, some wounds take a lifetime to heal. And often they even need professional help. It sort of reminds me of this really interesting quote. I don't remember where I came across it, but I'm sure you guys have seen it a lot too. The one that says, if you don't heal your wound, you'll end up bleeding on someone who didn't cut you. Something along those lines. Often we were talked down or talked badly to by our parents, by our teachers, by our society or whatever. And then we end up doing that to our children, our students, our society, our colleagues, or strangers even. The comments, like, if you really want to know how toxic people can be in their words, just go to the comments section on YouTube or Instagram. And you can see that these people who maybe aren't that bad in person, when they are hidden behind that veil, that the veil of the cell phone screen or the computer screen, they become the most bitter, most impolite, most inconsiderate monsters that you could ever come across in life. And God, if you could ever waste a bullet. You know what I mean? And how do we deal with such treatments? Just ignore it. Whether someone personally, like, offends you in your face, or does it virtually, if you can idfa billati hiya ahsan, repel evil with that which is better, then kudos to you, go on ahead. But if you feel like you can't do that, just ignore it and walk away. It's not worth your time, your energy, your feelings, any of it. Thank you for being with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
That was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi amanillah.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.